Cue the theme music.
What's that? Good evening and welcome to the November 6th Board of Directors meeting for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. If we can do a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Ray Russum?
Here.
Chair Lee?
I am here as well. So if we would all please rise for our Pledge of Allegiance, and Billy has agreed to lead us in that this evening.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Thank you for that, sir. So next, that'll bring us to our agenda review. So is there any member of the board that wants to change the order of the agenda? Otherwise, we'll proceed as published.
Nope.
Okay, very good. Seeing no objections, we will proceed as published, which takes us to public comments for items not appearing on the agenda this evening, where this is an invitation to members of the community to present comments, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters which are within the jurisdiction of the board, of the district, and if anyone wants to come forward and speak on public comment. Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and close that and bring it to our consent agenda. Does anybody have any questions for staff on any item on the consent calendar?
I do, 5D.
5D. So anything for you, Linda?
No.
Very good. So questions?
Let me open up. Jeremy, my question is on the under fiscal consideration. It says this is an expenditure of $104,000 roughly, and there's a line item for $295,000, and it says that that was included, and it says that a portion of those budgeted funds be used for this, and the remaining funds be used for construction. My question is, will the remaining funds cover it?
Yes, and so I'll also let Michael weigh in on this as he did craft this staff report. But yes, so that in the previous fiscal year, we set off to do this project, this clarifier replacement. And so it was through that we realized we didn't budget enough money during that fiscal year. And so we did reprogram what we believe is enough to move forward to complete both the design and the construction of getting this equipment. The item before you on consent is to, right now it's, we have this Ovivo style clarifier, and so it's a proprietary product. And so we're just replacing the guts, the most expensive components. And so it's a sole source only. We've got to use their licensed product, and so that's why it's before you as a sole source item. And so that would leave enough money to install it, because it's largely a bolt-in type of installation. We'll have to shut down the clarifier for several weeks, and they'll remove some components and bolt all that back in. But we do believe that there's adequate money for construction. And if Great. You'd like to weigh in, Michael?
No, that was...
You concur?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. That's my only question. Thank you so much.
Very good. So did that generate any questions? Very good. We'll go ahead and open up the consent agenda for those members of the public that want to speak on any item on the consent calendar. Seeing no one come forward, we'll bring it back to the board for action.
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and I'm thinking this is just a voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The consent agenda is approved. So which takes us into our action items for this evening. First item is consideration of adoption of a resolution granting cost of living adjustments and modifications to the MOU between the South San and Service Employees International Union Local 620 and adopting a district salary schedule. Mr. Gent.
I'm attempting to do it all electronically since the board package was so large, I didn't want to print 188 pages. And so let me get to the item, if you will. So before you is a consideration of adopting resolution granting cost of living adjustments and modifications to the memorandum of understanding between the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District and Service Employees International Union Local 620 and adopting a district salary schedule. It's recommended tonight that your board grant a cost of living adjustment and modifications to the benefits and memorandum of understanding between the SSLOCSD and the Service Employees International Union Local 620 Exhibit A, and adopt the district's salary schedule as required by California Public Employees Retirement System Exhibit B. So a little bit of background. In in November of 2017, the district employees, the operators at the district, established a union. So we had completed our first 2 year of MOU, and so we reopened in a contract. And myself and Alicia Laura negotiated the contract that's before you. Board was kept up to date throughout closed session. The summary of the changes in the MOU, and I'll run through these. There's a salary increase that would be retroactive to July of 2019 of 3% of base salary. And then in July of 2020, there will be a 2.75% increase to employee salaries. On the medical side, CalPERS, there were substantial rates, and we share those cost increases with employees 50-50. And so that's what's proposed. In addition to that, because of some of the steeper increases, the employees negotiated a cap on what they might be exposed to during a year, and that cap was set at $125 of medical insurance premium increases. If it exceeds that, the district would then step in and pick up anything that was over that $125 increase. Sick leave, the employees negotiated slightly accelerated versus an existing benefit on cash out of sick leave on how much they've accrued during different years. And so right now, previously there was 15 years of service and 20 years of service to get that. And now it's you get a cash out at 10 and 15 rather than the 15 and 20. Additionally, life insurance was requested, and we granted that a $25,000 life insurance policy for each member in the unit. So that is something that has been negotiated, and we're prepared to move forward with a company to offer that service. And if the item's approved tonight, and with that, it concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions about the MOU.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. Is there any questions to my left? Questions to my right?
Sure.
Very good. Thank you. Is there any member of the public that wants to speak on this item this evening? Seeing no one come forward, we'll bring it back for consideration and action.
I'm happy to do that. I will move that we adopt a resolution granting cost of living adjustments and modifications to the Memorandum of Understanding between the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District and SEIU Local 620 and adopting a district salary schedule.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Let's do a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressam?
Yes.
Chair Lee?
Yes.
And before we move on, I just want to publicly thank Jeremy for all the work that you did on this. You did a fantastic and professional job. Thank you.
I definitely agree with that, and then also thank the staff for being here this evening, and to the continuity and the family that's been generated at the South San District. So,
yeah, I'd like to also thank all the staff for being here tonight. Jeremy, it's good to see you. You guys do a great job.
Very good. So that moves us into item number, as I tried to electronically move down the agenda as well. Item 6B, which is a resolution amending the adopted policies and procedures for expenditures of the district. So, Mr. Gent.
So, 6B. So the resolution amending the adopted policies and procedures for the expenditure of district funds for supplies, equipment, construction, and services as set forth in resolution number 2010-274 and amended in resolutions number 2014-314 and number 2016-353. It's recommended that your board consider and adopt resolution number 2019-410. A little bit of background. The district has adopted and uses the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, CUPCA. And as part of that, from time to time, they update limits, and that was the precipice for bringing this item forward. As statutory changes to purchasing limits covered under CUPCA change, from time to time, we need to bring this back to get those changes adopted and ratified by your board. Under discussion, we can kind of summarize what was changed in our purchasing policy. And this policy sets limits for district expenditures, both authorized at the staff level, at the chief plant superintendent level, Mr. Jones's threshold, and then my district administrator threshold, and also it says when we go for formal bidding, informal bidding, and what levels of expenditures come before your board, and that's all established in the resolution. But in section two, there were several revisions that were previously all contracts or for services or supplies and equipment in excess of $25,000 had to come before the board. This update takes that my authority to $30,000 before I would have to bring anything to the board for approval. So a $5,000 increase in that threshold. Previously, the plant superintendent was capped at $1,500 for expenditures that he could authorize, and so that's being updated to $2,500 that the plant superintendent can authorize. The district administrator, the equipment and services between $2,500 and $15,000, that amount was increased from $7,500. So, Gil. And I'm going to pause there on Gil on 2.4. Yeah, so that that authority for that section of 2.4, my authority is now 15,000. And then if we go down, these other ones were set by statute for the 200,000 increase was part of the update that the state rolled out. So that's included in their updates under CUPCA. And there's no fiscal considerations to be considered in this. And that concludes my staff report, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Very good. Thank you for that staff report. Is there any questions to my right?
Be straightforward. Thank you.
Very good. Questions to my left? Yep. Very good. So any member of the public that wants to speak on this item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back for discussion and consideration.
Your turn. Yeah, okay. So I'll make a motion that we approve the resolution amending the adopted policies and procedures for the expenditure of district funds for supplies, equipment, construction, and services as set forth in resolution number 2010-274 and amended in resolution number 2014-314 and number 2016-353.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Ressum?
Yes.
Chair Lee?
Yes. Very good. That item passes as well. So that takes us to item 6C, which I will pause for scrolling as we get an update on the project schedule for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. Mr. Jens.
Good evening. Jeremy Jent, District Administrator. Before you is an update on the project schedule for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. It's recommended that your board receive and file this update. A little bit of background. In 2005, the need for a redundancy project at the Sanitation District was identified by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And at that point, the district did begin pursuing the need for that project. In 2010, the board held a public hearing and adopted a resolution for such a project. And during years 15 and 16, the board pursued and approved funding for the project as well as initiated the process for permitting and design. Some of the main project components driving the schedule include obviously permitting the project, procuring the construction management team, USDA loan application and financing, and additional financing, the community workforce agreement, and then ultimately bidding and construction of the contract. And so there's a I'm going to go through each one of these and kind of give an update on where we are with the schedule on those and how that's impacted the project to date. So permitting this past May, we reached a critical milestone where we vested our coastal development permit and our final coastal development was permit was issued. So that portion of the permitting is complete. One minor, the only other permitting issue that remains before us, and it's just not not time to do yet, is there's a new generator being installed, and that requires a permit from the Air Pollution Control District. But that can't be obtained until the generator is specced and identified, because it requires specific mechanical information to be included in the permit. So the bulk of the permitting is complete on the project, and the APCD permit is a relatively straightforward process to achieve that. Procurement of a construction management team, and I will like to recognize that a couple members of the construction management team are in the audience this evening, and we have an item before you, the next item for the construction management. But that was a larger effort that staff and our extension of staff, MKN, assisted in selecting our construction management team. And that item, as I said earlier, is in 6D, the next staff report, and so we can elaborate on the construction management at that point. A little bit of background on the funding and why we're here, and I want to talk about, you know, and when we talk about the USDA, that's the timeline that that we're going to want to maybe focus on to understand, you know, why we are where we are today. So. SRF loan and application. Previously, the district set out to, with the hope and the understanding that this project would be competitive for what's called state revolving fund money. During the project development, the state revolving fund, the state modified the criteria for receiving that money, which resulted in a project like redundancy, but being much less competitive for receiving that subsidized funding. And so with that, we did complete an application and received a score, and we were below the cutoff threshold for score on SRF funding. That left us with our only other low-interest funding being option before us, being the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And so as we looked into the U.S. Department of Agriculture funding, substantial efforts on the project had already been underway, and so it was through that, as we were completing the application and the project engineer's report, there was some additional questions and additional environmental analysis requested by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. One of the more important components of that, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is a federal agency, and so that requires a NEPA analysis rather than a CEQA analysis. This project is considered by NEPA a CE, which is categorically exempt. And so with that, we can use our CEQA. And so we just had to craft a report and modify our CEQA and have a cover letter for it and submit that for their review to do. It was the CEQA plus report. Now, but some of the other things that have impacted the schedule was a request for an additional biological assessment and a cultural resources assessment and a flood study. Those were not necessary under, some of those items were not necessary under CEQA, but were requested by the USDA. And when we undertook those, that has added time to do these consultations with these other federal agencies. And it has added approximately 5 months to the last time the schedule was updated, where we were, hoping that we would be advertising in November, December, and now we're not going to be going out for advertising until what looks like the first week of March at this point. I do think the schedule has been substantially updated with a good amount of quality control. Mike Nunley and Associates and Kennedy Jenks have spent substantial time with what we know now updating that schedule, and so we are progressing and staying on schedule with the most recent schedule. Kind of moving on, the community workforce agreement, it was a big effort over the past few months. It did not impact the bid date or the construction date of the project, but it did affect multiple facets of the schedule and required multiple modifications of the schedule, such as extending the construction management selection several times while we updated that request for qualifications so that they had the best information to propose on, because the community workforce agreement was very relevant to the construction management team. As I said earlier, the current schedule anticipates bidding the project during the first week of March. We would anticipate having that for advertisement at the first Wednesday in March. And then with the process taking that forward, it would be June 2020, that following June, when the project would commence construction with completion in September of 2022. And I'll pause there. And anytime there's a delay in a schedule, one of the things you have to look at is what's that doing to our costs in the schedule? And we've been tracking this throughout. We have been figuring out this information over the past few months as USDA has asked for these clarifications on largely the environmental component of the application. We've been very mindful to track what's that doing to the overall cost. We've got some really good news, actually, with interest rates have continued to go down substantially. And so with the falling interest rates, the USDA is now at 1.75% interest on if we were to move forward with USDA funding. And so it's with that, over the course of the project or the debt service, that results in approximately an $800,000 savings to the district versus using like a municipal bond fund where we would be more like 3.5% or 3.75% interest. So because of that, staff remains committed to pursuing the USDA funding and continues to recommend that course because overall it creates a better value for the ratepayers. So with that delay, I met with Eileen Shields with MKN. What can we do during this delay to continue to add value to the project? Like what can we grab and move forward in a parallel track? And one of the things that came out of the construction management RFQs is everyone that we interviewed for construction management made a strong recommendation that the district should consider pre-qualification of the contractors prior to bidding. And we were able to determine that there is time with this, with the USDA extending the USDA financing, extending the schedule, we have an opportunity to take a little bit of time and district staff and MKN will pre-qualify contractors so that we have established contractors bidding on the project. Couple advantages to that. Basically, you're getting contractors that you know are capable of doing the work. Largely protects the district. Goes a long way to protecting the district against any type of bid protest that might come up because of some unresponsive bidder or unqualified bidder that sometimes bid on projects even though they don't have the right certifications. And so being a small district, you know, those type of protests and challenges can consume a lot of resources. And so going through with a pre-qualification makes sense because it will, you know, continue to add value to the project during this delay. A couple of future steps, you know, we need to, you know, get an updated full project budget. And the next big piece of the puzzle for answering, you know, the full project budget will be at bidding when we get the bid results for the estimated construction cost, which is still remains right now at a little over $21 million for construction, but it will be at bid. We'll have to update the full project budget and make that decision at that time. And so with that concludes the update on the schedule, and I'm happy to answer any questions the board might have.
Very good. Excuse me. Thank you for that presentation. We'll start to my right. Any questions?
I do. Regarding the USDA loan application, we've had several studies and things that you mentioned in your staff report that are obviously costing us money to do that. What's the cost that we've incurred in order to get to the $800,000 savings? Because that's not going to be a straight up $800,000 savings if we're spending money and time to get there.
So I I don't have the total tally. So the additional environmental review and maybe $40,000 to $50,000. I'm looking to Eileen because she's been tracking it with me. Am I in the ballpark? $40,000 to $50,000 additional Rincon environmental. Yeah, I'll invite Eileen to the podium if you allow it.
Of course. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. Eileen Shields with MKN. I'm assisting the district with project management on the redundancy project. I think I should have brought that number with me. We have been looking at it. There was a minor flood study that we performed at MKN, which was maybe in the $8,000 range, something like that. The additional environmental studies, I want to say their contract is in the $40,000 range, but that does include studies that were already anticipated as part of this application. We have been looking at the cost of delaying the schedule and potential escalation in bid costs as best as we can estimate, against the potential savings. And I meet with Jeremy about once a month. We talk about, okay, there's another request from USDA. Is it still worth it to pursue this low-interest financing? And it really comes down to the low interest rates, which 1.75 most recently. We're not sure that we can guarantee that, but the other quote was 2.25, I believe. So it's still substantial, but the other big piece of that is the 40-year loan term, and that really comes into play on debt service. So even with additional costs, I think we were looking at potential annual debt service savings of $70,000 to $75,000.
Over the course of 40 years?
Well, I mean, you can always potentially refinance. Things can change in the future, but
you can guarantee that
at least 10 to 15 years out.
And can you tell me that number again so I can write it down?
I want to say it was $70,000 to $75,000 a year.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That's my only question. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions to my right or my left? Very good. So one question I had had to do with the pre-qualification discussion, and I'm sure we'll have some additional discussion afterwards, but are there costs associated to the project for that pre-qualification from either staff or from project management / construction management staff?
Yeah, so we looked at what doing a pre-qualification would take, and that's approximately $22,000 to go through that effort. Now, that being said, there was already the intent. So contractor outreach was always a component that the project had budgeted for and was intending on utilizing. So the difference being is that contractor outreach is just like what it sounds like, where you're just going out and making all the contractors aware of the project so that you get people interested in the project. Now, pre-qualification, you actually look at their skill set and add them to a list and invite them to bid. And so it would be we would only take bidders that had been pre-qualified. And this is similar to what the city of SLO did on their recent wastewater project, their water recycling recovery facility. The big upgrade that we talked about extensively because they also used the community workforce agreement, but that project also utilized contractor pre-qualification to get competent contractors interested in onto the job. But yeah, we've estimated the cost of doing the pre-qualification at just over $20,000.
But the anticipation there is there would be obviously increased contractor knowledge, increased opportunities for a tighter set of plans during construction, as you've mentioned. That's correct?
Correct. So, yeah, some of the benefits of contractor pre-qualification, it does the contractor outreach component in itself, so contractors become aware of the project. And then, additionally, they have a chance to see the plans. And so, the more eyes that are on a set of plans, the more the chances are for issues to come up prior to going to construction. As these contractors look at this, they may have questions that will solicit responses from either the district or the design team that can improve the quality of the project. And so finding any type of design issues up front adds value. Now, they're certainly not tasked with doing a constructability review, but that is one of the very important components of doing pre-qualification, is that you get that type of feedback. And then addition to that, what I talked about earlier is big projects like this, like there's a lot of, there can be a lot of bidders, and they're not always competent or qualified. And I don't know if any of you have participated in disqualifying a contractor under protest, you know, that adds time to a schedule to even do that. And sometimes you may even have to end up rebidding a project during the course of that if it doesn't go exactly right. And so I think that's where that insurance comes in to a district of our size trying to even go through the a disqualification process of an unresponsive low bidder would exceed, we'd probably get to over $50,000 really quickly just dealing with the protest and awarding to another bidder. So it seems there's definitely value in moving forward with the contractor pre-qualification.
Very good. Thank you for responding to those questions. This is a receive and file, but I will open it up to the public.
I have an additional question before you go forward.
Of course.
I was going to ask it in the next item, but I think it's better to ask it here. Because the next item, what we thought the cost was going to be, is 35% higher than what the cost actually was. And I realize that that's going to be a different discussion. My concern is, where do you think that ballpark, where... The question is for the next one. Why did we miss? But it's applicable to this one at the same time as we move forward to pre-qualification and maybe bidding, and the danger of the costs escalating far beyond what a contingency might cover.
Yeah, and so that's definitely a question that I wanted to I'm prepared to answer on and was ready to do that on the next item. So. The last major update on the budget for the redundancy project occurred at the first meeting of April. And during that meeting, we talked about there was $1.7 million earmarked in the budget for construction management services. The contract before you is a little bit over $2.6 million, this item 6D that we're talking about next. Some of the reasons that was missed in April, I identified that to your board as being a potential risk. As far as I thought, the construction number was a number, the $21 million. There's some exposure to our district there that number could change because we don't control all of that. And also the construction management, that number seemed low, and that was the number that was provided by Kennedy Jenks. It is a long duration project, 30 months, and so at that time, district staff did identify that as potentially being a weakness as far as the budget went, but we moved forward with the, we would go through the exercise of selecting somebody. Additionally, when you're making a qualification-based selection, it's not a low bid environment. We have an excellent team, and so, well, let me pause there. The reason the $1.7 million was there is Kennedy Jenks, and we checked back with them. Kennedy Jenks had estimated the $1.7 million. They did the budget for the construction management during the design process. And when we checked back with them because of the substantially higher cost, it was a staffing difference. So right now we're getting more inspectors on the job. And so the initial proposal came in at, I think, $3.5 million. And so Eileen and I sat down and we went through the proposal and we negotiated with the M&S team and were able to reach a staffing level that got that number down to $2.6 million. And that accounting is included in the staff report. And at this point, we believe that's a good number.
The 21 million.
The $2.6 million is being a good number that staff sees the value in that. They've showed us how they've laid out all their staffing, and it seems appropriate to be able to cover what for them is a 3-year long contract. So they'll be engaged in district business for 36 months. And so
my question is just In relation to missing that, I'm not even addressing their contract. I'm asking about the $21 million for the project. You said you have anticipated that there may be a change there. Are you talking about a 35% change? I mean, what are you talking about? That's what I'm trying to get at.
So on the construction, I haven't estimated. So there's a couple of things that could cause the construction to come in higher. The community workforce agreement that we talked about. So that's going to affect our bidding environment. And so we can, we could see higher bid results because of just limited competition of the contractors that would want to participate in the community workforce agreement. The other factors have largely been the tariffs, and we've tried to price all that in, and so it's current and includes the tariff issues right now. So
and as updated recently,
35. I would say it's current right now at the 21 million. But I would say that if you're asking for my opinion, we're at a 10% type risk on that number.
So we're not at a
35%
okay,
risk.
That's exactly the question I was asking. Thank you so much.
Questions here? Nope. Okay. Very good. Then I will go ahead and open this up to the public, see if anyone wants to come forward and speak on this item.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and I appreciate your questions that are thoughtful and probably some of what I would have asked as well. I think the last question that Ms. Ray Russum asked was mine too. The 35% increase in the construction management, would that be equivalent or commensurate with the project price, and that is a concern. But I'm looking for my antacids over here. This is giving me heartburn, real heartburn, that the construction management is increased, the delay is of concern. A few months ago, Kennedy Jenks, I believe it was $80,000 a month was their estimate on delay on the cost of the project price. Maybe you could clarify that, but that a 5-month delay at best, in reading your staff report, it could be longer, is very concerning. And the reason that it's really bothersome to me is because I've been coming to these meetings for 10 years. I've followed this district. I've toured the plant probably 5 times in the last 15 years, and I understand the need for redundancy is because the fixed film reactor is a ticking time bomb. And another delay, I want to see plan B. I want to see when is the district simply going to bite the bullet and do what it takes to change out the gearbox that's been leaking, not leaking, been metal shavings in the gearbox oil, all the scare tactics into we must go this route with redundancy for these last 10 years, and we still haven't changed that gearbox, and we haven't put in a work plan to do the maintenance that it's gonna take. And I think when the project is done on this new timeline by September of 2022, it's not if it breaks anymore, it's when. When's it gonna break? And so what funds are set aside to address this maintenance that's required? Because a spill is gonna cost a whole lot more than if you just take the darn thing offline. And I know it's complicated and I know it's expensive, but it can be done and it needs to happen. Even if you completed construction in September of 2022, you'll still need to keep that fixed film reactor running until the plant is up and running, the new plant is running up and meeting all the standards. It's not gonna be just flip the switch and it's over. I think I am concerned that pursuing the USDA funds may no longer be worth it, because you've got competing clocks, and the escalation of the project price may outpace that. I did have one question about the 16%. The USDA is going to cover 16% of the loan. Will that 16% apply to the number that you're talking about now, or the final project price? Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. We'll answer them after we close public comment. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Seeing no one else come forward, we'll go ahead and close that. And I think there were a couple different questions. Mr. Gent, did you want to respond to those, please?
Yeah. So in regards to Plan B, the district actually does have a Plan B. So the gearbox that Ms. Tacker is referring to, it is one of the non-redundant features that we can't take offline to work on right now without bypassing a portion of our process and under-treating our wastewater before we send it out. Our Plan B is not 100% sure to work. So our Plan B is more of a like if the failure were to occur, we have a system in place where we could plumb the water and basically create a spray field that would basically keep the fixed film reactor in place. So to explain this, why it's relevant, and it's a very important component about, you know, why we're doing redundancy, is our fixed film reactor has a giant 55-foot rotating arm on the top of it, and this arm has been rotating since 1983. And there's a platform with big steel ball bearings out in the middle, and so that's the turntable that we're talking about that's failing. So we change the oil on that. We get the oil tested. There's metal shavings in the oil, so we know the bearings are failing in this piece of equipment. We currently own a new turntable. It's in our fixed film reactor downstairs. We can pull that out and set it with the crane. So our Plan B is if we were to have a failure right now, if it were to fail tonight, you know, we would mobilize, we would get the water plumbed and bypassed and up there spraying on top of our fixed film reactor, hire a crane service, and take the arm off and put the new arm on. There is the risk that we would be under treating our wastewater during that window of time, during that failure and that upset. And so that's the need for the redundancy project in itself, is that to have a reliable way where you wouldn't have to potentially under-treat your wastewater before sending it out, and to have an official way that you could take half your system offline and still do all of your maintenance. So that's our Plan B. You know, Michael has ensured that the materials are present to do that. It's something we look at annually to make sure that it's a plan that we can implement. And so we're ready and standing by if we had some equipment failure before redundancy is complete, we would implement that plan. So it's not a full fix, but it would be after it was done, but we could potentially be violating during that 1 week period while we implemented all that. A couple other things on the 16%. The 16%, there was a question on whether the 16% USDA funding applied to the so it will apply to the final contract amount. USDA is on board. It's a pro rata share of the population and the is it equivalent dwelling units? Is EDUs? Is that the term that USDA used? So it's basically looking at all the dwelling units in the community of Oceano and comparing that to the other agencies. And so it's that pro rata share of that. So that would apply to the final cost, whatever it is. They would grant that, yeah. So on the $80,000 a month for delay, that's a straight line, 3.5% escalation, just more of a rule of thumb. So you have a $29 million project, 3.5% a year increases, inflationary increases. And if you do that, 3.5% of 29 million, that's $900,000. That's $80,000 a month. So that's The $80,000 a month of potential escalation fact by delaying the project.
So that's not fees to Kennedy Jenks?
That's not fees. That's the just that everything's going to cost more 6 months from now than it costs today type of straight line. And so there's other forces at play, obviously. Sometimes you end up in a recession and those costs can actually go down. So, but there are inflationary pressures that we monitor, and that's something that, Eileen and I track and consider when assessing the delays. And that captures all the questions that I noticed.
And I agree. I didn't capture any other questions. I guess one question that gets generated from that is, if we chose not to move forward with the USDA funding, can you remind us what our other funding sources are to backfill that hole? And what kind of rates or percentage rates or interest rates would those potentially entail?
So the other funding options for us are, we have approximately $8 million in cash reserves that we will be using to move forward with this. We can increase that. That's just the money we have on hand. The other option is municipal bonds. And so these are bond sales. We hire bond counsel. We've already started that process through Bartle Wells and their contract for doing financial support. And these bond councils will sell municipal bonds on the open market. And that's the interest rate that I referred to, that we would be closer to 3.5% if we went. So we're leaving a fair amount of money on the table. It would... there does not appear to be any obstacles that would prevent us from going that way, other than it would cost the district ratepayers more over the long term. But we could, if we decided tonight, we might be able to, like if we said scrap USDA and move forward 6 to 8 weeks, we could shave off the schedule if we just abandoned all the investment that we've made at this point for the low interest funding. So what we're talking about is staying the course to save that $800,000 over the life of the project versus scrapping it and advancing the project approximately 6 to 8 weeks faster than we are right now.
So where is that tipping point, do you anticipate?
And that's what we're tracking. So I think that tipping point becomes when we're not making up, when we're not saving money.
I guess I'm asking you, I mean, I understand conceptually where it is. I'm asking, where do you anticipate that is? Are you anticipating that, for example, you said we're looking at maybe March. What if it goes to April? I mean, at what point do you, I mean, surely you've done the math of where that point is maybe expected to be right now.
So yeah, I mean, I think we're 12 months, you know, at that point we've consumed the saving. If we have to extend the project by another 10 months versus what's being presented here tonight, basically a whole, like if we, instead of March, if
counting from when?
From the March, if we added 10 months on from that March and said we weren't going to go until January of 2021, you know, that 10 months of delay would... Now the tricky part is the reality is that you kind of get strung along in the process is the reality. So I'm not sure that decision would change all that much, because at that point we would still be in this the situation, kind of balancing the same thing. It's still going to be the lower interest rate, and so even we've kind of already eaten that delay at that point. So I think the conversation would remain similar if you're following what I'm saying on that, because at that point we've already...
I understand it's a moving target and you've kind of invested in that. I get it, but thank you for that. That helps a lot.
And so I think from the perspective of realizing that we have favorable interest rates on the USDA loan, that's still supportive in my mind of continuing this delay and potentially using this window to have the pre-qualifications. If we get to the first part of next year and all of a sudden interest rates start to go up and the municipal bond rates don't go up, then we have a different conversation. But I think staying the course right now is my preferred option.
Me too. I agree.
Okay. Very good. Anything else on this item? Otherwise, it is a receive and file, and we will proceed on to the next item, which is item 6D, consideration of award for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project construction management services with MNS Engineers, Inc. Mr. Gent, notwithstanding the potential to have two firms starting with M.
I struggled with that. Not kidding.
it can be a challenge. As you said, the item, award for wastewater treatment plant redundancy project construction management service with MNS Engineers Incorporated. So the recommendation before your board is to authorize the district administrator to execute a contract for construction management services for the wastewater treatment plant redundancy project with MNS Engineers in the amount of $2.616 million and $44. A little background on the project. So it's going to be similar to previously. So the district has been operating since 2005. The district's been pursuing a redundancy project. And there hasn't been major process improvements, as we talked about, since the 80s. So a lot of that equipment has been in continuous operation since the 80s. And so the need, I don't want to get too much into the need that we've already covered for the redundancy project. As part of the CM outreach, so we're trying to hire a third-party construction management firm to oversee the construction of what's a very large investment for the Sand District. The current plant value is approximately $100 million, and we're going to invest another $29 million to extend the life of that plant into the foreseeable future. Back on August 14th, we received statement of qualifications from a number of firms. We invited panel members from each of the districts that we represent, along with Michael Jones and myself, and we ranked the quality and the expertise on the construction management team. And at that point, it was a clear decision that MNS was the top-ranked proposer. And at that point, we set out to negotiate a fee. The fee before you is a little over $2.6 million, as we talked about earlier. The district had previously estimated that effort at $1.7 million. That is an exceedance that would need to come from the project contingency, which is coincidentally also $1.7 million. It's not a mistake. Actually, I think it's $1.675 right now. So that $900,000 shortfall will come from the project contingency. And staff recommends that we move forward with the selection and award for MNS to bring them on board to participate in the construction management and ensure that the district has a quality product that we can operate safely and effectively and meet all of our permit requirements. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. And I will note that the members of the MNS construction management team are in the audience.
Very good. Thank you for that presentation. We'll see if there's any questions to my left.
No, not yet.
Questions to my right. Okay. Very good. I did have one question. Perhaps it grows into two. It has to do with effectively burn rates on the construction management firm. So I don't think we've talked about it, but if we had a performance clause in our construction contract that encouraged our contractor to complete the project in 30 months or some other time frame shorter than the three years or 36 months in here, that would potentially reduce the amount of this contract, correct? I mean, if there was a shorter duration to this contract or potentially even a longer duration, that would impact.
That is correct. This is a time. It's all time and materials contract. So efforts or construction changes that shorten the duration of the project would have a pretty direct and relatively linear impact on the fee, but not directly linear to the changes.
Okay. And then obviously there's a internal staff and consultant staff with MNK. MKN. So, sorry, that that will be monitoring the work of the construction manager. And so, if there's a need to reduce staff hours on the project because everything is going as we've got a really good high quality contractor, they're doing great work, everything's coming back in highest quality, we could adjust adjust time frames during the course of construction as well. Correct.
Yes, and on that note, there is the potential for that to happen. Obviously, contractors will establish their own methods for completing the work, and so that can vary a fair amount because a designer is like Kennedy Jenks is required to, you know, assume how the contractor is going to staff and complete the work, but we don't really get to direct how they conduct their business. So there is the potential for them to, you know, and certainly if there, you were speaking earlier to a performance clause, or I don't know if you were referring to like an incentive, disincentive type of feature that would really push them to get it done sooner. On, you know, if we just look at the construction, that's about 10% of the overall project cost. So that's a rule of thumb too. The $2.6 million on a $29 million project, that's roughly 10%. And so that is in line with what you would expect to see on construction management. So I'm not sure if because the dollars of adding an incentive clause or a performance clause might exceed the savings of what we might see on the construction management. So we'd just have to look at that if we wanted to consider that, whether there we could recover that value.
Okay, and I think maybe my question was probably just easier stated in my head, is that staff and our consultant project manager will be reviewing all of the time and effort put in by the contract manager to make sure that we're getting the best value as a district.
Correct.
Okay, and then second question is, you had mentioned that the difference in contract costs would be coming from the project contingency. This is not impacting the construction contingency, correct?
So the construction contingency, when we get the bid results, we would, you know, that would include the 10% for construction contingency. So that would be part of that $21 million.
Okay. So this is a different line item in the overall project budget.
At this time, now obviously that, since it's an overall project contingency, that money could, like if there, it could have been shuffled into a contingency for the construction if it were still available, if it weren't consumed by something like this. But yes, that's a project level contingency at this point.
Okay, very good. That answered my question. So did that generate any questions?
No,
you confused the hell out of me in that answer. Could you state that one more time?
So,
is it out of the entire budget, or is it out of the construction management budget?
So we have a $29 million project, $21 million construction, $8 million is all the other costs, the design, construction management, permitting, those costs. And out of the $29 million, I've set up that contingency to be for the $29 million effort. The $1.7 million that's remaining is to deliver the whole project, because that contingency, like, we may not have ran into increased costs in construction. We may have ran into increased costs in permitting, and that's not even covered in construction. We don't get there. So there's a contingency to develop the project, whether there's design changes or increases in, this example right before you tonight, the increase in the construction management cost, that's part of the soft costs that go into the project development. So the $1.7 million contingency that we have for the full project is being consumed by this change.
So it is not a separate line item. It's out of the entire project budget contingency at this point.
Correct. It's out of the entire project budget.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, I will open this up to the public, see if there's any member of the public who wants to speak on this item. Very good. Well, then we'll bring it back to the board for consideration.
I'm happy to make a motion. I just want to comment that if everyone has not had a chance to read that proposal at the end, there's a timeline in there that is fantastic. So I very much appreciated that as part of that proposal. So I will move that we award the WWTP Redundancy Project Construction Management Services Contract to MNS Engineers Incorporated.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Ray Russum?
Yes.
Chair Lee?
Yes. And so we have a construction manager. Congratulations. Very good. So that
no hoots, no hollers, no anything. Man, engineers aren't very fun. Thank you.
So with that, we will take it. That will take us to item 6E, which is the...
on that separate...
was a
email.
Separate email.
Yeah, it's
yes.
A separate email.
But it is the District Administrator and Plant Operations Report. So who wants to start? Mr. Gent or Mr. Jones?
I'll go ahead and kick it off and turn it over to Mr. Jones. I feel like I've been talking a lot, but I'll keep going. So before you, just some quick updates. I'm not going to spend any time on redundancy since you had a full update before you. Central Coast Blue... actually, earlier today, Gil and I met our legal counsel. We met to talk and review the MOA language that has been drafted by Water Systems Consulting. And so we're going over that. And I think a number of your agencies are going through that same MOA right now. So you're familiar with it. So that work's ongoing. And, you know, as some of the member agencies move forward with the district, we'll, you know, come along with that discussion. And we'll continue to support the project and, you know, keep your board up to speed with the most recent events on Central Coast Blue. Several miscellaneous items. Since last month, we were notified by somebody with an error on their property tax rolls for the community of Oceano. As most of you know, there's we collect wastewater charges for the community of Oceano on the tax rolls, and that's been going on. Well, this dates back to the tax year 1718. So there's 15 residential properties in the Halcyon neighborhood that are still on septic, but were inside the district boundaries, and the consultant in the district incorrectly assessed them for wastewater charges. And so we need to correct that. So the district will be issuing refunds. It's approximately $9,000 in refunds for all the properties for the 3 years of overpayments. So that's forthcoming. I have been in communication with some members of the folks from Halcyon that have noticed this. Also been in communication with the tax collector auditor controller's office, and they're making the correction. And NBS is our consultant that puts these rates on the tax roll, and they're also making the correction and giving us the value of what the refund needs to be. They'll calculate that for us. And so we anticipate that to have those checks sent out by the end of this month, those refunds. And I'll take a moment to pause if there are people watching this that live in Oceano. If you happen to be on septic still and you know you're on septic and not, check your tax bill, because when this effort was undertaken, the intent was to, you know, obviously only to capture people that are receiving wastewater service, but there may be pockets or unknown houses within the community of Oceano, like Halcyon, that actually aren't on, that are still remain on septic and should not be charged. So. If
what's
you have
the line item on the tax, what does it say?
So the line item, it's pretty clear what it is. It's a lot of abbreviations, but it, you know, it's SSLO CSD,
okay.
SAN district, and it has a phone number to call if there's an error. So it's all listed right there as an individual line item on the tax bill. Moving on from that. Flood control zone 1 and 1A, which is the AG Creek channel. They had the big cleanup. They were on site at the district using an underutilized portion of our facility to stage and store material. That's done. They did a good job at cleaning up our yard. And so it was overall a good experience, and we're happy that we were able to participate and assist the county with that minor offer to let them use the space. I think they did a good job on the creek cleanup, and I imagine that will provide some benefit to the district and reduce flooding hazards. Earlier this month, or in October, I met with LAFCO, which is the Local Agency Formation Commission, and so they're doing sphere of influence and map updates. They do that from time to time, so they reached out to the district and said they had kind of just completed the process with, I believe, AG and Grover, and that dovetails right into updating. No major changes for the Sand District, so it's really just going to be a process. I think there's our sphere of influence might change slightly to pick up a few houses on a water system in rural AG that I think Arroyo Grande picked up off of Branch Mill Road. There was a failing water system up there, so LAFCO said you should probably have that in your sphere. They won't be in the district, but sphere of influence just means we get copied and notified if there's zoning changes and stuff like that going on. So county work, Oceano Drainage, another county project, a big pipeline project that's been years in the work, is moving forward. They did have to adjust a district manhole, so that work's been complete. They notified us, and we took a look at that work as it was happening. Back on October 24th, I participated in the Countywide Water Action Team, which is a county-led group that meets. They had fallen out of, they'd stopped meeting for a number of years, but they finally put it back together. And it's really a large-scale solving the countywide water problems. I was invited to participate, and I did attend. I'm not sure that Sand District has a continued role in that because it did seem more focused toward water purveyors, so I don't know if ongoing I'll be participating. But to the extent that Central Coast Blue is relevant, obviously that matters. But folks like, well, WSC is involved in that committee, and Ben Fine from City of Pismo Beach was there. Greg Ray was there from Grover, so I think it's well attended by the purveyors here. Coastal hazards monitoring, so that's one of our coastal development permits. Mr. Jones and I met with Rincon Consultants, who is going to be running that program, that coastal hazards monitoring plan and reporting for us. So they were just getting set up. As we come into the rainy months, that's when they have to do some of their monitoring and pictures on certain levels of rain events. And we report on that annually, so we did that kickoff meeting last week. And then, the new development in AG involved some of our manholes off of Cherry Avenue there. There's a relatively large residential development that's turning out quite nice, in my opinion. And there were some issues with us not being notified that they were working on our manholes, but we got all that cleared up and were able to get that addressed, and that's all satisfactory at this point. The final work's still to continue. A couple upcoming, there were no plant tours in the period. We're going to bring forward a first quarter financial review at the December 4th meeting. We've got some revisions to the Kennedy Jenk contract, and I'll elaborate a little bit on that. So Kennedy Jenks has a contract that hasn't begun yet. It's called Engineering Services During Construction, and that's really to pay for the designer to participate during construction for review of catalog submittals, inspection of certain key design components. That's all included in that contract. And going through the USDA effort, they've asked us to modify the front-end documents to include their USDA front-end specs, and so that's a revision that we'll be making. So even though that contract was adopted by the district back in 2016, we'll have to bring it back with the revised front-end specs and update that to satisfy the USDA for that, because that was a contract that was let prior to the USDA being involved. Central Coast Blue MOA, I talked about that a little bit already, so that'll be coming. And then obviously the district goals and priorities, there's got to be more than redundancy in Central Coast Blue, but I'll be coming back to get this set up to strategic plan. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Jones so he can tell you about the plan operations.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. I'm presenting the plan operations report for the reporting period of October 1st through October 30th. During this reporting period, the district's facility met its permit limitations as required under our NPDS permit. Moving on to operations and maintenance projects, operations staff completed multiple confined spaces, removed one of our influent pumps for rehabilitation. And then just continuing on, operations staff completed multiple work orders and participated in some training, attended confined space and entrance supervisor training, and then also reviewed transferring our reclaimed water over to city water. And then all staff participated in first aid and CPR training. For callouts, there was a callout on October 2nd at 3:55 a.m. for a motion alarm. Operations staff responded and inspected the main office, and there was no signs of entry. And then continuing on to our notice of violation, on October 24, 2019, the district received a notice of violation from the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding non-serious violations that occurred on July 5th, 2018. The NPDS permit limits that were exceeded were 7 sample median and daily maximum for fecal coliform. For each of the non-serious violations, the district has been assessed a $3,000 penalty, which totals out to $6,000. And then just continuing on, the district is accepting the conditional offer to participate in the expedited payment program. By accepting the offer, the district can avoid the issuance of a formal enforcement action and settle the alleged violations identified in the notice of violation. In addition, acceptance of the offer waives the district's right to a hearing, and the district must pay the mandatory minimum penalty as indicated in the notice of violation. The Central Coast Water Board will accept the payment and settlement of any enforcement action that would otherwise arise out of the violations identified in the notice of violation. The Central Coast Water Board enforcement staff will forego issuance of a formal administrative complaint, will not refer the violations to the Attorney General, and will waive its right to seek additional discretionary civil liabilities for the violations identified in the notice of violation. And then just continuing on, the Central Coast Water Board, what they do is they'll publish at least 30 days, they'll publish the enforcement action addressing the permit violations and provide public comment for 30 days. And if they don't receive any public comments, they move forward and accept our waiver, essentially. And then if they were to receive a significant amount of public comments or new evidence, then they would pull that, and then there would be a hearing regarding the said violation. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you for those presentations. So any questions to my right?
Yeah, I just need a quick reminder. I went back to the July report, but I think there was overlap, so I thought I might have been looking at the wrong report, because that was the one where we talked about the there was another settlement that we were talking about at that time. So can you remind me what these two violations were? I mean, I can read what it says in here. Yeah. I just don't remember the discussion that we had.
These are from last year.
Oh.
July of 2018. Yeah, they're from last year, yeah.
No wonder I couldn't find it. Okay.
And one thing I'd also like to add, for the 2019 year, we've only had 2 violations thus far for the full year, one of which, or both of which, I don't believe will be assessed any fines. They're still...
Was that the weird chlorine one?
No, there's a fecal coliform, and then the previous one in March, which was one of our contracted labs failed to run an analysis correct. So I don't believe we'll be assessed a fine. There is a couple months left in the year. The rainy season's coming. But I have full confidence in our operations staff. They are prepared. And I think we should be, overall, I think we're ready to go.
Don't test it anymore.
So just to elaborate a little bit on what Michael's referring to. So the fines before you from the regional board, they occur at, it's called chronic minor exceedances. So in a 6-month period, if you exceed three, once you exceed three, you're a mandatory minimum fine. So in that period, on July 5th, we actually created our fourth and fifth exceedance. Okay. It was my second day on the job, so it was a good welcome for me. Thank you, Michael. it was definitely the boss showing up, right? Of course it's going to happen, but so that's important. The March exceedance with the BOD, that was a single occurrence, so we didn't hit the three, and that's 6 months past, so there's no exposure there for the minor occurrence. And then we actually just had a single occurrence last month, and it would fall in. And so as long as we don't get two more in the next 5 months, we should avoid any fines or penalties.
Great. Thank you for that clarification.
Any other questions? Very good. Any questions to my left?
Just thank you very much.
Thank you for that, and thank you for the clarification on that. I will open this up to the public, see if there's any member of the public that wants to speak on the plant admin and operations report.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and my first question for Michael. Under the training, you talked about operations staff reviewed switching from plant water to city water, but you said the word recycled, and I don't know what that means. Plant water to city water. So when you get a chance, I hope you can answer that. The questions for Jeremy, Mr. Gent. NBS is going to run some numbers to refund to the Halcyon folks. Are they charging the district for that when it was probably their mistake? I'm curious, and maybe they should eat that a little bit. Or a whole lot, all of it. Central Coast Blue, the memorandum of understanding, I would like an update on the when we might see a draft EIR. And I saw that, I had heard that they were in escrow on a property in Grover Beach, and I've been watching the property through their closed session agenda postings. And then just their most recent meeting, they've posted another property that's in that very vicinity, and I wondered if something happened and they're out of escrow on the other property, or if they're just having a backup set of properties, two properties, on this latest agenda, closed session agenda. And then when you're setting the goals and district priorities for the upcoming anticipated things, I think it's long overdue about talking about how the coastal development permit for the redundancy project requires the district to begin to look for another site. And I think sooner as opposed to later is important, especially as real estate begins to develop out. In this area, you probably need to identify the site and begin raising the money to purchase it and start the move. So I hope to see that on an agenda in the near term. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Seeing no one else come forward, we'll go ahead and bring it back for staff to respond. We'll let Mr. Jones go first with plant water versus city water.
So essentially under normal operation, we have our plant water, reclaim water, which we have pumps that pull off of our chlorine contact tank. And basically what that does is that feeds hoses throughout the plant for rinse down water. We also have multiple pumps that have water seals, and basically that water is being fed into those water seals. And in the event that system were to fail, we switch over to city water, and that basically essentially you just run hoses and kind of bypass your reclaimed water. So now the plant's running on city water instead of plant reclaimed water.
Weird question, since you're in an unincorporated area, who's city water?
Oceano.
Okay, so it is. Okay.
CSD water.
CSD water.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Sorry.
No worries.
Water.
So,
yeah.
So, Mr. Gent, there were a couple of potential questions there with regards to, one was NBS, and when I heard you say that the first time, I thought it was an MBS, and we had another M consultant. but with regards to the potential for correction.
So at this point, it's been a relatively minor effort for MBS. I don't anticipate them billing us anything for this effort. They do have a contract with us for providing this service, so it's included in their scope as far as processing the tax rolls. Now, without going back and trying to recreate the history, I can't say whether it was their mistake or our mistake. So, ultimately, we provided them a list of the district boundaries. The district participated in that effort with establishing that initial list. There was an effort where properties were removed that were on septic. I'm not sure, what transpired that allowed these Halcyon ones to be missed. I spoke with Karen White from Oceano's board, who is a resident in Halcyon, and she talked about how she's been paying it for 4 years and never looked at it. So she was kind of chuckling about it, but. On the MBS side, we have a contract with them to provide services to get it on the tax rolls for $11,000 a year, and Adina, our contact person there, she's just handled this, and there's no agreement for any additional reimbursement, and I don't expect to see any. But if there was, I guess to elaborate that, if there was a minor, my intent would, if there was a minor reasonable bill for that effort, I would take a look to see if we had any culpability in the error, and then would make the decision to either pay or not pay based on that finding. Okay. As far as the drafty, I'm sorry, Jeff.
I was just going to say, I think that settles that. And then I was just going to say, with regards to Central Coast Blue and the MOU or escrow on properties, I don't know if there's anything. Obviously, we're not the PISMO Council closed session, so we're not really sure.
Yeah, and so that's was going to be my answer. Draft EIR, it's a question I ask to the group. The district's a minor role. We are paying for a portion of the district or the draft EIR or the full EIR. So we have a dog in that fight, but at this point we're not leading it. I think the answer is better coming from PISMO as far as when we can expect to see the draft EIR. And then the property stuff, because I do participate in some of PISMO's closed session discussions and have been given some of that information, I don't want to talk about any property acquisitions because I'm not sure what they've released or not released. And moving on from that, the relocation of the plant as far as a future district goal and priority, certainly something I've been thinking about. There is language in our coastal development permit that has us studying the need to relocate due to climate change. But it was not my intent to recommend moving forward with any of those studies and until completion of redundancy. So our first check-in with Coastal on that is 2027 to find that out. But it will be there will be a strategic planning session and a kind of a sewer master plan effort that will need to be undertaken to identify potential sites. But certainly with the effort of moving redundancy forward and making that big investment, planning for relocation while we're spending a bunch of money trying to get it doesn't seem necessary or appropriate at this time, but certainly toward the end of redundancy, 2022-2023, starting a master plan that would look at potential future sites would be appropriate to satisfy the needs of the coastal development permit and stay in compliance with that condition. And that's all I had noted for questions.
Very good. Thank you for those updates. Did any of that conversation generate questions? Very good. So that is a receive and file. So we'll go ahead and move on to item number 7, which is miscellaneous items. Do we have any miscellaneous items this evening?
There are no miscellaneous items.
Thank you. That takes us to board member communications. I'll start to my left. Ms. Austin.
Nothing.
Mrs. Ray Russell.
I guess it's appropriate to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone who's watching, because we'll see you after that holiday.
Exactly. So, yes, definitely happy Thanksgiving. I do have one board member communication in that Grover Beach has moved forward with our a water master plan and a sewer master plan. We are anticipating, assuming it stays on the agenda for the first meeting in December, which I believe is the second, the sewer master plan update. So I anticipate I'll probably see Ms. Shields at that meeting for our sewer master plan. But there, depending upon a meeting that I have up in Monterey that day, I may not be in this seat. You may have my alternate for the December 4th meeting. So, but other than that, any other communications? If not, we are adjourned.